Sit
life.
My table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
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 Equality.
Equality.
Remedy. And succession.
Fairness.
Fair time.
Citizens.
Right.
Work.
Peace.
Losers.
Men.
This is my mistake. Let me make it good. I raise the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
Expression. Expression, expression.
Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Progress.
Culture.
Human rights.
Charter Dana.
Solidarity. Responsibility.
Fill in the mortar. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM. And over the internet at cjtr.ca. We can also be heard on SaskTel Max at channel 806 and Access Communications Digital Service at channel 700. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We are building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, The Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings, and with me today is my co-host Gordon Barnes. Tis the season, and we're going to look at some things, notably books that you might consider as gifts this year. And we'll be looking back at some of the highlights of our amnesty activism this past year, looking ahead as well. Welcome, Gord.
Well, thanks for having me back on the program. It's great to be here, Jim. And also want to extend a warm welcome to everybody who's listening to Human Rights Radio this Friday.
With the emphasis on warm.
Yes. You know, we've had some pretty reasonable weather in the last week or so. It's good stuff. I guess the only people who might have a bit of concern are the folks who like to cross-country ski. But
yeah, I think that's coming along. When I went to Mission Ridge a couple of Sundays ago, and they had taken advantage of the bitterly cold weather we had just prior to that to make all kinds of snow, and the hill was pretty good. Now I don't know what the warm temperature has done to it, but it's on the north side of the hill, so it's probably fared not too badly, but I'd give them a call before I went out.
Okay.
Just to see.
Yeah. So we were going to spend the largest portion of the program today to talk about some interesting options for reading over the holiday season, whether it's reading that you might do yourself or ideas for gifts, perhaps. There's a lot of options out there in terms of where you go for some reading material. So we've picked something from some of our local publishers here,
mm-hmm.
and also a few options from the library that we thought we'd share with people, because you know there's some great reading at the Regina Public Library and within all our public library systems, wherever we're living. So that's what we thought we'd spend the largest portion of the program on. But before that, we thought we'd also share a little talk by Alex Neve, the senior staff person with the Canadian section of Amnesty International. A few days ago, the Amnesty International released its annual, this is done every year at this time, human rights agenda for Canada, in this case, a human rights agenda for 2015. It's quite easy to find that on our Canadian section website at amnesty.ca. And in this short little clip, Alex is introducing some of the issues there in terms of the themes, and we thought that would be a good way to kind of kick off this program, and then after we've done that, return to some of the ideas we've got about reading for the holiday season.
This document lays out Amnesty's recommendations to the Canadian government as to what needs to happen to ensure that in Canada and from Canada, we are doing everything we can to end human rights violations, be they here at home or abuses happening in trouble spots around the world, and that we're making the kind of contribution we need to make to ensuring that human rights safeguards are improved and strengthened right around the world. Universal human rights protection is the ideal we need to work towards. Universal human rights protection means here in Canada, it means everywhere, and there's an important role Canada can and must play. The 2015 human rights agenda comes in advance of what we know will be an election year. There will be a federal election, and there are going to be so many issues in front of Canadians. Issues that the government is going to be reminding Canadians about. Issues that the other political parties will be trying to get attention about. There will be a lot of talk about jobs and the economy, about families and communities, about national security, about law and order, about Canada's efforts to promote freedom and democracy around the world, and we assume also a lot of talk about the programming the government has done with respect to women and girls on the world stage. The human rights agenda, however, is saying at the heart of all of this, we cannot lose sight of the fact that at the end of the day, it's all about human rights. And when these programs and policies and laws go forward without ensuring that human rights are right at the heart, we lose out, both with respect to human rights and justice, but we also lose out in our aim to work towards greater prosperity and to support families and keep our communities safe. So the human rights agenda reminds us that when we talk about jobs in the economy, we have to pay attention to the fundamental land and resource rights of Indigenous peoples. We have to make sure that our corporations at home and abroad are living up to human rights responsibilities. We need to put human rights at the heart of our trade policy. When we're talking about families and communities, we cannot lose sight of the desperate crisis of violence and discrimination faced by Indigenous women and girls right across the country, the inequalities that Indigenous children face, and the fact that we still have not addressed poverty at the levels we have to. Dealing with national security on our borders cannot come at the expense of fair and generous refugee laws and policies, and we certainly cannot pursue national security at the expense of civil liberties and human rights. On the world stage, absolutely, Canada has done some important things to stand up for freedom and democracy in a number of countries, but there is so much inconsistency. There are so many countries that do not capture Canada's concern, and where Canada even stays silent. We need consistency. Human rights is a universal value. We need to see that universality be right at the heart of Canada's approach. So as the election approaches, there is much you can do. You can certainly put these issues in front of the candidates who are vying for election in your own riding. You can seek media attention in your community. Write a letter to the editor. You can regularly go on Amnesty Canada's website to check for suggestions and action opportunities. We need to get these issues in front of Canadians. We need to get these issues in front of those who are aspiring for political office. Please check out amnesty.ca regularly. Take action. Speak out. Let's ensure that this time, this election, pays attention to human rights.
And, of course, that was Alex Neve himself, our Secretary General for the Canadian Section of Amnesty International Canada. He was making his statement in front of the Parliament Buildings of Canada in Ottawa. And if you'd like to have a look at that video again, and there are lots of other videos that you can check out as well, just go to amnestycanada.ca. I think that's right, isn't it?
That's right.
Amnestycanada.ca.
Amnesty.ca, that's all it is.
Oh, just amnesty.ca. Yeah, yeah. Okay,
I'll be easy to find. And, you know, one of the things that's within the, you know, the call around the human rights agenda for 2015 is sort of related to events in the United States just in the last couple of weeks, because people may have heard the news about the release of the Senate investigation into torture in the United States. And, you know, it's just absolutely incredibly difficult reading to hear about what has gone on in the United States. But there is a Canadian context to this, and that is we have not, as a country, ratified the optional protocol on the prevention of torture yet. And we need to be one of the leading countries around the world around that issue. And we have also at times, unfortunately, been quite complicit and contributed to people having been subject to torture. So mm-hmm. there's a significant connection to the events of, the last couple of weeks in the United States with the release of that report, and then the agenda that we're trying to raise as a human rights organization in going into 2015. So just wanted to highlight that.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe it's a good time now to turn to some of the reading ideas we've got over the holiday season. We wanted to highlight at the beginning of the program when we're talking about this that a year ago, Amnesty Canada launched a book club, and it's really quite simple to join it. It's free to join. It's easy to find online, again, by going to our website. There's been some great options for reading over the last year, and just one that I would mention that personally that has always been a favorite of mine. It's The Cellist of Sarajevo by Stephen Galloway. That was the May Book Club selection. And I certainly, if people haven't read that one, I'd recommend, you know, heading out to the library or a bookstore and finding that one. It's a good read. So, Jim, you've read some of the books that have been featured in the book club yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe a little bit more than I have, actually.
I've only read two.
Okay, I've so do you want to share the ones you've read off the...
I read 3 Mile Road by Joseph Boyden.
Okay.
And that was such an interesting read. It's not ordinary by any standard. When you get into it, just the construction is challenging. You're going to different times in a story. It takes place shortly after the end of the First World War. That's where the main story is taking place. But then they go back in time from there, and they also go into it's a First Nations experience in the First World War. Some of it is pretty brutal. Some of it is pretty hard reading. But just a fascinating read. And we were lucky enough. Did you get out to that night, Gord? Joseph Boyden was...
I wasn't able to.
Was
but,
here. Oh, yeah. He was here in Regina. And he's since written the Orenda, which I need to read. I haven't read that yet.
Right.
I understand it's quite fascinating as well. So I would certainly recommend Joseph Boyden, 3 Mile Road, and the other book that from the book club that I read was one that's been around for a while, but I hadn't read it, and it's called The Book of Negroes, and that was fascinating. I love historical fiction. And this is very, very well done historical fiction. Learned an awful lot about how the black population came to arrive in Nova Scotia. But that was just part of the story, you know, just a small part of the story. And again, it's great. Lots of true historical context. The Book of Negroes actually exists. And that was an interesting thing to find out. And it involved a promise by the British to properly resettle black folks who were in New York. And they promised to give them land and settle them in Nova Scotia and various other places. And as so often happens, not all the promises were fulfilled. And it goes on from there. And it's just a fascinating read. And I'd recommend it to anyone, for sure.
Thanks. So a couple of the other titles that might be worth mentioning in the Amnesty Book Club list from this last year. One is a book by Ann Michaels called Fugitive Pieces. And another is What We All Long For by Dion Brand. And that was actually the June selection. Another book from the September selection was Fall on Your Knees by Anne-Marie MacDonald. And the November-December book was Rue by Kim T. It's T-H-U-Y. And that's a translated book. So, you know, I think all of them are probably worth exploring. And with each one, there's a discussion guide that you'll be able to get after you've read it. And as I say, it's an interesting way to participate in a book club. I've had a chance to do a little bit of traveling in Saskatchewan over the last year and discovered that there are many libraries who are highlighting the books in the Amnesty Book Club list. So I don't think you'll have any difficulty finding them. And the Regina Public Library is really doing a good job of supporting, creating some awareness of the Amnesty Canada Book Club as well.
I was given a Kobo a couple of Christmases ago by my daughter, and so I took this opportunity when I joined the Amnesty Book Club to read these books. Both those books I read on the Kobo there, and borrowed them, the electronic books, from the library. And that's good and bad. The good thing is you're really pressured to read because you don't have that book for that long, and not that you're not going to be able to renew it. Mm-hmm. And some people have strategies. I think what some of them do is they'll give the book back. I'm not even sure quite how to do that, and then renew it again, or you know, take it out again. But if you let it run out, well, then it takes a while to get it back again, and then you're even more you've got even more incentive to finish it up. And that's what happened with me and the Book of Negroes, and I found myself really. Really putting pedal to the metal and getting her done, you know. But really good story. And I think there's some books that you'd just like to have in your library, Gordon. You know, the problem with the e-books is if you borrow it, then it just is not there anymore. I like having it there.
Yeah.
Then you can go back to it.
So, I was sharing with you earlier, Jim, a book that's just been published this fall, and it's called Woodland Cree Stories. And I found it quite an interesting little book. It's really a learning tool because the largest portion of the book is Cree,
mm-hmm.
but there are some interesting stories translated in English, and I think from my perspective when I read it, I really enjoyed this because there was an opportunity to pick up on some of the culture and all the rest. So
wow, yeah, I'm just looking through it here now, and it's I know some people. You don't have to be, by the way, if you're not an indigenous person. You're quite welcome to go to the university and take Cree courses.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And if you might want to do it as part of your undergraduate work, yeah. That type of thing. My daughter-in-law knows some Cree. And she can, I don't know whether she can write it, but she can speak it, or at least understand it, mm-hmm. to the surprise of some people.
Yeah.
She has surprised some people in the past. The story that we got, one of the stories that we got in the book here is a story called Buffalo Wings. So here it is. It's in Cree on the left-hand side of the page and in English on the right-hand side of the page. So I'll read the right-hand side of the page. A long time ago, our grandfathers were skillful hunters. Listen, I will tell a story about them. Have you ever eaten that food known as buffalo wings? Those are buffalo wings. They are tasty. Okay, I will tell you. Long ago, when the Cree people went hunting buffalo, they would not kill them. They were satisfied with knocking off their wings. That's how skillful they were. True. All they would do would be to cut off the wings from the buffalo. They, too, liked the taste of buffalo wings. They were true to their mark. They rarely killed the buffalo. Eventually, the buffalo became numerous. And eventually, the buffalo started to be born without wings. It's because of evolution. Yes, that thing known as evolution is the reason that today the buffalo are born without wings. It's true. Our grandfathers were very skilled hunters. Eventually, the buffalo became very numerous over there in the prairies, no longer having any wings. That is why when the people from across the ocean arrived, these Caucasians, they never did see buffalo with wings. But it is a wonder they are so inventive. They can still cook and sell buffalo wings. They are truly tasty. So there's quite the sense of humor there.
So I think I need to apologize. I got the title wrong a little bit, but you've got it there, Jim, and you can maybe reference the title of the book again and also the author.
It's Woods Cree Stories, and they're written and translated by Solomon Ratt with illustrations by Holly Martin. And it's a nice little soft cover book. It's only $24.95, and it's from the University of Regina Press.
And with that, I think it's worth just referencing a couple other really impressive books, because from the University of Regina Press in each case. It's a relatively new kind of entity at the University of Regina, and it's just got a fabulous list. So I guess the one I will mention before the break is one that's actually written by an Iranian philosopher who talks about his time in Evin prison. The book is Time Will Say Nothing. A Philosopher Survives in an Iranian Prison. And it's by Ramin Jahbegloo, and apologize if I didn't quite get that right. But it's a really interesting read. He is the winner of the Peace Prize from the United Nations in Spain, an advisory board member of Pan-Canada, and is a internationally celebrated philosopher. He's currently at York University in Toronto, teaching there. And really interesting. One of the people who I've got as a personal kind of hero in terms of his writing and his human rights work, and Vaclav Havel was also really quite a significant philosopher in many ways, a writer and poet. When I read this particular book, Time Will Say Nothing, I think back as well to many of the writings of Vaclav Havel, who, even though he was Czech, this author is originally from Iran, very, very similar kind of themes. So I think we're probably close to the break.
Yep, we are close to the break, and I've got some music queued up for when we're done the break. I like going through this 4-CD set, the songs of Bob Dylan. It's called The Chimes of Freedom, The Songs of Bob Dylan. And it's sold by Amnesty International. If you get on the website, you can find it, and you can buy this set yourself. So this time what I found was Sinead O'Connor. I'm a big Sinead O'Connor fan. And the title of this Bob Dylan tune is called Property of Jesus. So we will go to the break here first and come back to our music.
Property of Jesus.
Boy, I keep finding gems in that CD set there, Cord. I haven't played that one before. I hadn't even seen it. But there's so many selections there, so many titles, so many authors that you spend a little time looking at it. And, oh, there's Sinead O'Connor. And last time I found Adele.
Yeah.
Yeah, so very current stuff. We've got a book here that we'd just love to mention, and it's one that I'm particularly... I'm a particular fan of. It's by James Daszak, and I guess the reason that I'm a particular fan is because James came to the Unitarian Center some time ago and talked to us about it. So it's something that I'm kind of familiar from that point of view of. And there's some materials. If anybody wanted to get to find out a little bit more, they could contact me, and you could listen to the podcast from the Unitarian Center. And James also left some material with us that that we could have a look at if you wanted to. However, we have a description of the book that I'm just going to talk from, and this is from a U of R publication called Degrees. And it really goes to the point of what the book, which is called Clearing the Plains, written by James Daszak, what it's all about. And... at any rate, I'm just checking to see. Yeah, so he wrote this article. I just realized that in the magazine about the book. Okay, so this is James Daszak that I'm quoting, and he starts off by saying, "As Canadians, we think of ourselves as decent, even good people. We're nice. We take care of each other with universal medical care. We've even enshrined that into the most important institutions of our society, Saskatchewan." Where the idea of medical care for all was born is a province with an ethic of hard but honest work that in a generation turned sod homesteads into the breadbasket of the world. This all sounds pretty good. And there's only one thing. The prosperity and the expectations of the good life that flow from it aren't available to everyone. Individual health outcomes will vary from person to person, but the ideal situation is to have as small a gap as possible between the rich and the poor with regard to healthcare needs, life expectancy, and so forth. If we all get sick and die at about the same stage of life, then the system and society is working at its most efficient and equitable. Study after study has shown that Aboriginal communities are the poorest and most marginalized in Canadian society. Not surprisingly, the most vulnerable to disease, violence, and preventable death. Because of our demographic makeup, the gap between the mainstream and our Indigenous neighbors is a particular threat to Saskatchewan's future. In the next 20 years, the proportion of Aboriginal people is expected to double to 30%. In 40 years, half of the population could be First Nations or Métis. We probably don't like to think about it, but the differences between living conditions for those in the mainstream and Aboriginal people in the province are so striking they could be living in different countries. In the yearly ranking of countries in the United Nations Human Development Index, Canada consistently ranks in the top 10. If the same measures like housing, education, and health were applied to the First Nations population, they would be on par with Romania in the 72nd position. In 2013, two-thirds of all First Nations children in Saskatchewan lived in poverty. Two-thirds of all First Nations children in Saskatchewan lived in poverty in 2013. Tuberculosis rates in First Nations communities are 31 times higher than the national average. Infant mortality is triple the Canadian average. More than 100 Aboriginal communities across the country don't have safe drinking water. An average funding gap of $3,000 to $4,000 and as high as $8,000 per student per year between the provincial school system and the federally funded schools on reserve means that many of the buildings are decayed and unsafe. Less than half of the kids who live on reserves finish high school. More Aboriginal young people go to jail than graduate. A recent article in Maclean's magazine called them second-class children condemned from birth to a poorer, sicker, and shorter life than the rest of us. As I write this, and that's James Daszak who's writing this, as I write this, people from across the country are calling for an investigation into how almost 1,200 Aboriginal women and girls have gone missing or been killed. In Winnipeg, the families of the missing and the murdered have taken it upon themselves to drag the Red River for the remains of their loved ones. So how did we get into this absurd and terrible situation where members of one group can expect to lead a shorter, more violent, and sicker life from the moment they are born? This was the question I tried to answer with Clearing the Plains, the culmination of more than 20 years of research. I knew the story would be grim. Before Columbus, America wasn't a disease-free paradise. Some societies flourished while others floundered, occasionally in violent confrontations with their neighbors. The chain of events that was unleashed with the arrival of Europeans to the continent is hard to fathom. Without previous exposure to a number of old-world diseases, all were equally vulnerable. I'm just about done here. In the case of smallpox, the most deadly, 8 out of 10 may have died in the span of 3 weeks. Survivors so sick they could barely move often succumbed to famine. In an instant, communities lost their elders, the keepers of knowledge and wisdom, the children, their mothers and fathers, a true catastrophe. Some communities buckled under the pressure and disappeared. Some joined together, creating new identities. That's just part of the article that James wrote about his book, Clearing the Plains: Disease, Politics of Starvation, and the Loss of Aboriginal Life. A powerful book, well worth the read. And like I say, if you're interested, I can point you at a presentation that James made at the Unitarian Center and some material that he left for us. But I think you would find, anyone would find this well worth reading. And I think it's important for us to educate ourselves so that you realize the truth behind why our Aboriginal citizens find themselves in the situation they are.
And, you know, the good news about that particular book is it has been a Canadian book bestseller. So it's getting a lot of attention and some fabulous reviews. And it's good to be able to feature it as one of our recommended books for the holiday season in terms of either gift-giving or perhaps reading yourself. It's now out on paperback, which makes it a little easier to get. So certainly that's an option people might want to explore. You know, I was talking about exploring, dropped into the Saskatchewan book publishers group on 11th Avenue in Regina the other day, and picked up some things for this program today. But I was reminded when I was there that there's a significant publication that will be coming to an end, and that is that for years now there's been a day planner published by Cotto Books. It's called Her Story, and it's a calendar day planner, and it's been incredibly popular over the years. But Her Story 2015, which, by the way, is still available, there are still some copies left, will be published in 2015 for the very last time.
Oh.
And I'd certainly have got a number of those for gifts for friends, and I think if you're still doing some shopping for friends on your list, it is one I would recommend. It shares the stories of Canadian women and organizations that have helped shape Canada's Her Story and Canada's history, and I would certainly recommend that. Because it's going to be a keeper, that particular edition, the 2015 edition. Mm. Another one that I picked up when I was there is a book of poetry by a good friend who is from Regina here, lives here, but actually is currently doing some research work in Mexico, and that is a book of poetry by Bridget Keating. It was published a couple years ago, but it's still readily available. And it's called Red Ceiling. And, you know, it's a really interesting little book of poetry. I encourage people to take a look at that. It's also available at the library. I checked about that. She's written one poem called Sparrows. I might read just a portion of it here. This is the way it reads. It's, "My son says no one ever notices sparrows. They are not pretty like other birds, and they annoy people. Through the kitchen window we watch them, thin winter bodies birthed from branches of elm trees. He tells me they carry the souls of the dead on their wings and clutch the souls of newborns with their stub beaks. My son, his quiet hunger, body thirsting for attention, understands this journey." I'd recommend it. It's a wonderful collection of poetry, and as I say, Bridget is actually teaches at the University of Regina and doing some research work for her doctorate in Mexico currently. So certainly recommend that as an option as well. Another book that I discovered, and in this case it was from the Regina Public Library. It's a just released book from November of 2014. So it's, put it this way, hot off the press. And it's a collection of articles that mark 50 years of acting, and that's the title, Acting for Freedom, 50 years of civil liberties in Canada. And it's reflecting on the work of the Canadian Civil Liberties Association. So they've been around now for five decades. And interestingly enough, it's got a foreword by Joseph Boyden, who we referred to earlier. And, you know, in the foreword, he notes that civil rights don't just apply at certain times or to certain people, but apply always and to all. And, you know, the Canadian Civil Liberties Association is an organization that in many times Amnesty's worked very closely with. They've acted to protect democratic rights of Canadians, there have been some very significant hard-won victories in the past, but clearly they note in the publication the work is not over, and they're continuing to confront new threats to our freedoms every day. So that book is called Acting for Freedom, and as I say, it's available readily at the Regina Public Library. Another publication I wanted to mention, because actually there's a couple that I found at the library, and I've just want to highlight it, going back to the discussion at the beginning of the program, really, because we mentioned you know, the Alex Neve has just recently, on behalf of Amnesty International Canada, released our human rights agenda for 2015, and a key part of that is a call for Canada to ratify the optional protocol to stop torture. There's the connection to the whole issue of torture in Canada to the U.S. Senate report that was released within the last couple of weeks and the significant issues that have happened there. But when I was at the library the other day, I noticed a book that I'd read a few years ago. It's by Kerry Pither, and it's called Dark Days, and it's actually the story of four Canadians who were tortured in the name of fighting terror. It's got a foreword by Mahar Arar, and I'd certainly recommend it if people have an opportunity to do some reading over the holidays. Another one that I discovered that I hadn't seen before, and I'm going to make sure I get through this one, again from the library. It's called Radical, My Journey from Islamist Extremism to Democratic Awakening. And it's by Majid Nawaz. And it's really looks like an interesting story. He was actually adopted as a Amnesty International prisoner of conscience, and reformist Arabs took him under their wing. With his release from prison, he renounced political Islamism and travels the world organizing young people along democratic lines. He has risked his life to do that. But he is really an interesting individual in his story, I think, and really looks like he can kind of grab hold of this. And the book talks about, by reading the story, it will make you believe in change. And, you know, I think about this particular story in the context of some of the events that have been in the news, the tragic events in Canada and some other the other places where people who have been radicalized and have unfortunately caused some really terrible events to happen where people have been killed. And think about it in the context of this particular book. It's probably a good one to read. So another recommendation. And we've got so many opportunities in terms of our local publishers here in Saskatchewan that I'd really encourage people to explore the list available through the Saskatchewan Publishers Guild. And another book that I really enjoy, actually, and have read is by Doug Cuthand, who writes for the Saskatoon Star-Phoenix. And it's still available. It's a collection of his writing. I think it's well worth our taking the time. Doug was actually a professor of Native Studies and taught at the University of Manitoba and also the First Nations University of Canada. Throughout his life, he has been active in First Nation politics and frequently translated at political gatherings. He was a minister in the United Church, or sorry, in the Anglican Church, and over the years helped many people at a time before the political organizations and social programs even existed. And that's actually, sorry, that's Doug talking about his father, Stan Cuthand. So I'd really recommend taking a look at his writing. And as I say, he is regularly featured in the Star-Phoenix, sometimes in the Regina Leader Post, maybe not as much as we'd like it to appear there, but good writer.
You know, one book that we haven't mentioned, and I like to think of it every year when it comes time to gift giving, is Beautiful Trouble.
Mm-hmm.
That's, of course, co-edited by our local. Well, his origins are local.
Mm-hmm.
He's all over the place now. You can't really
that's right.
You can't really call him a Moose Jaw resident anymore. Dave Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I were lucky enough to be at the book's kickoff here in Regina a couple of years ago. And it's a fascinating read, just on its own, in its own right. But it's basically a handbook for activists. Beautiful Trouble.
Yeah, and you can find a lot of the book and sort of updates to it at a website called beautifultrouble.org. Thanks for reminding me of that, Jim. It's well worth highlighting as we're concluding this year and thinking about things we might start to get in terms of activism for the new year. There's another book I wanted to mention. It's available through the Saskatchewan publishers, but also in bookstores readily and in the library. It's Breathing the Life into the Stone Fort Treaty. It's by Amy Kraft, and it talks about the negotiations, in this case, leading to the signing of Treaty 1. And it says to understand the treaties with First Nations, it's essential to understand the First Nations perspective. And this perspective is informed by First Nations law in the case of Treaty 1 and the relationship to kinship and land. So it's another relatively new publication that people may want to take a look at. And there's a lot out there, really some good options for this time of year. A lot of good children's publications that have been released by Saskatchewan publishers as well for, you know, for young people who may look for something in terms of reading themselves or for teachers to use in the classroom. So wanted to reference that, and you'll find them. I think we're really quite fortunate here in Saskatchewan. We've got some strong publishing houses and need to, you know, support them, and there's every reason to do that.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'd just like to go back to our Amnesty Book Club.
Yes.
You know, that's really worthwhile having a look at. There's lots of good selections there. And I've just got started, and I'm enjoying myself for sure. And, of course, you can join with other people and discuss the book. That's part of what I think is a possibility. You know, you can get more than one person involved in reading the book, and then you can mull it over.
Yeah. And so just to maybe mention again, because it's a good way to conclude the program, the Amnesty Book Club is easy to find the information about it just by going to our website, amnesty.ca, or actually there's a specific site for the book club. It's amnestybookclub.ca. A few of the titles that mentioned earlier in the program, but one of them is The Cellist of Sarajevo by Stephen Galloway. It was on the book club selection for May. Another one is 3 Day Road by Joseph Boyden, which you said you've read, Jim.
Oh, yeah. Good book.
You mentioned as well that you've read The Book of Negroes by Lawrence Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the October selection. And, you know, another book is Fugitive Pieces by Ann Michaels. And that was the July-August selection. And with each of these ones that we've referred to, there's a reader's guide and discussion guide, so you'll be able to get involved with the book club and connect with other people who are doing the same reading.
With that, Gord, I think we're absolutely out of time here, so this has been great. I'm always, my interest has peaked for sure, and it's more valuable time spent in front of a book than in front of a TV set, I tend to think. At any rate, Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."